in the home 6010.
Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. Field, Matthew, and Kyle all here today. Kyle holding it down in place of Daniel Stefania. So for those that are unfamiliar, haven't checked the weather in Connecticut, it's quite cold today. It's cold, it's wet, it's rainy, icy.
Icy roads.
Right. So if you're looking for Stefania, she is in Playa del Carmen right now.
Right,
she decided to leave yesterday. Can't blame her, can you?
She got picked up on the private chopper.
Right.
She immediately flew to the airport, her private, you know, private aviation.
Right.
You know, security picked her up, and bingo bango, she's on a beach.
And have we confirmed, she mentioned she was coming back in March 2023 or 2022?
She'll be here Sunday. She will fly back in. She will have the, you know, you'll see the paparazzi shots as she, she gets off the private jet and saunters into beautiful, I don't even know. Is it Studio W? Which studio do we do Fantasy Football now
in? I think it's W.
I think it's W.
I'm pretty sure the NFL studio is X and outside the lines is Z. I think we're W. Yeah. X is Sports Center.
Dang. X is Sports Center.
It didn't take me long. Screw that one up. All right. So maybe we're Y.
We might be Y.
Maybe
I
Z.
Don't know. We're like whatever the last one was. It's not Z. It's not Z.
I'm thinking we're Y.
We're Y adjacent.
Yeah, we're Y adjacent.
Something like that.
Why do we have this show again? Studio, why do they even put these guys on the air? So
it's a question that gets asked often, early and often anyway. So yes, who's here on week 18, the Wednesday of week 18? Who cares about you? Who loves you, Fantasy Focus Nation? Who's not thinking to themselves like, I'm just bailing on you guys? No, I'll tell you who loves you. Who cares about you? Who digs deep? It is Field Yates. It is myself. It is Thirsty Kyle Soppy. And that's it. That's the only people that care about you. Everyone else collectively just is like, figure it out yourself. But we're here.
We are here. And what we're going to do today is a few injury updates. We're not trying to be entirely dismissive of week 18 because ESPN default settings do play through week 18. So we're going to discuss some week 18 ranks as well. But
so
a lot of people,
millions of people play in week 18 because ESPN is the largest fantasy football platform, candidly by a decent amount. And so more people play with us here at ESPN than any other platform. Our default settings, to your point, if you just sign up for ESPN Fantasy Football, you don't adjust anything. And obviously it's very customizable. You can do whatever you want with it. But many people just say like, I'll play the way you guys say.
Right.
And so the default settings set by our ESPN technology group and games group, they do a great job, is a 2-week playoff. Is a standard 10-team league. 4 teams make the playoffs. It's a 2-week playoff each week. And so week 17 and 18 combined score is the finals. And so there are literally millions of people still playing this week. And we are here in service of them. Other people obviously playing DFS this week.
Yeah,
a lot of DFS as well. And so we're here to help out.
And we are also going to look forward a little bit as we are going to pick and choose our spots with Matthew's 2022 Way Too Early Top 50, which was available in your love-hate column this past week. But we'll start with some injury updates. And just a few here. Lamar Jackson, quote, has a chance to play on Sunday, Matthew. He's been out for multiple weeks because of that ankle injury. Here's the thing, is that obviously, if Lamar plays, like, you would feel pretty good about starting him. He's Lamar Jackson. It's also possible that you found a viable option that has carried you along the way over these past 3 weeks. So if you've been relying upon Lamar Jackson, you might have options. But speaking generally, if Lamar plays, assuming he's not out at practice and barely being able to complete drills because that ankle is so compromised that he's clearly not Lamar, like, absent those circumstances, then I'll be playing Lamar Jackson on Sunday.
I think the key here is that Tyler Huntley's been good. Is that the Ravens, that the reason the Ravens, like, the reason the Ravens lost to the Packers wasn't Tyler Huntley's fault, right? I mean, you know, and so, and by that, I mean, the reason I bring up the effectiveness of Tyler Huntley's play is because that they're not, Lamar Jackson is their franchise. They're not going to, this is not a, I'm trying to think of a good situation. I'm not trying to get a good example here. This is not a This is not a Ben Roethlisberger, Mason Rudolph situation where you're just like, where there's a significant downgrade, mm-hmm. where they're just like, we got to get somebody back in there.
Sure.
Right. You know, this is, it's an important game to the Ravens. They are still alive in the playoff hunt, I believe, right?
Yep.
They are still alive. So
I mean, it's like the wackiest of circumstances. Right. They are alive. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, right. They're going to need a lot of help to get in. They are unlikely to make the playoffs, but they still, mathematically, they still have a chance. They are going to be playing to win this game. And so my expectation here is that if they thought there was risk to Lamar Jackson further injuring himself or that he couldn't play at 100%, couldn't play Lamar Jackson level football, you know, then I think they would turn to Tyler Huntley because Tyler Huntley has performed well in replacement of Lamar Jackson. So I agree. If the Ravens are playing Lamar Jackson, I think you can feel confident in starting him against the Steelers on Sunday. I will say that's going to be, generally speaking, I think that's a low scoring game. I think that's a tough game. That game always is. That is truly one of those throw out the record type games. That's a cliche that gets thrown around a lot, but sure. I believe when it comes to Ravens Steelers, it's accurate. Those are two teams that do not like each other, and that regardless of what's going on in the season, both teams always get up for each other.
And Ben, most likely his final game as well. The Steelers in a miracle to get into the playoffs themselves. The next piece of news here is that Derrick Henry, according to Diana Rossini, is expected to return to practice today for the Titans. Matthew, I would be surprised, maybe like very surprised, if he plays on Sunday. I mean, coming off of a foot injury, this is a player who has been so productive for so long and also so durable. Like, do you really want to test him right away? Maybe then for a few snaps. But what I will say, the importance of this is not about week 18.
Yep.
The importance of this for me is about 2022. Because let's say we don't see Derrick Henry on Sunday, but we get a game or two games in the playoffs. That'll be the best litmus test to decide whether when we start our drafts next year, we are positioning Derrick Henry as either the number one overall player in fantasy drafts, number two, number three, because if he looks like himself during the playoffs, that conversation between he and Jonathan Taylor, maybe Cooper Kupp, maybe Christian McCaffrey is really interesting next fall.
It really is. It really is. There's a good conversation in the offseason about what you do, Derrick Henry, where you place Derrick Henry in your drafts next year. And we can talk about where I have him in my 20. I have him pretty high up in my 2022.
Yeah, you're about where I expected him.
Right. And so there's that, but there's also there's a longer dynasty conversation about him. Right. He is a player that defies all logic. And by that, I mean, people have been fading him for, you know, the last couple of years. Well, he's so touchdown dependent. He's not involved in the passing game. You know, he's going to get hurt. And prior to this year, he's been incredibly durable,
sure.
despite, I believe, leading the NFL in total touches every year prior to this year, that he's been a starter, right, where he's been the guy. But on the other hand, he's, for a player of his age, he's actually sort of underutilized for a number of years. When he came to the league, he was behind DeMarco Murray. He was splitting time with Deion Lewis, of all things. Like, it is mind-boggling to think sure. about his usage when he came for the first couple of years he was in the NFL. So Derrick Henry is a fascinating player to talk about into 2022 and for dynasty leagues as well. But I agree with you. If you're starting a Tennessee Titans running back this weekend, it is Deontay Foreman, who that's an interesting conversation as well. I assume Foreman is on a 1-year deal. Like, it was just, he was signed as off the street. Like, he's sure. probably got a basic street free agent, minimum
yeah.
deal.
Yeah.
And he has played really well. I think he has opened a lot of eyes in the NFL, and we'll see. If I was Tennessee, I'd be like, you should be our backup to Derrick Henry next year. We should sign you to a nice little deal here.
He's not Derrick Henry, but he's kind of similar physically. Like, yes. He's certainly effective between the tackles. He's got good speed. He's a powerful guy. If you look at their numbers in terms of pure rushing totals prior to Derrick Henry's injury and then since Derrick Henry's rushing injury, they've been remarkably effective as a rushing team this season, even without him. It's really impressive.
It really is. And what you get with Deontay Foreman, if you're Tennessee, is like, we don't have to change our offense.
Sure.
You know, I mean, like, yeah, to your point, like, we're not saying he's Derrick Henry, but he has a similar running style, and he's built somewhat similar, you know, to the extent that anyone on the planet is built similarly.
Yeah, there are not many. Henry.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
It's not a I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense for both player and team. We'll see how that plays out. But I agree with you. If Henry gets in, it's for a couple of snaps for our purposes here in the world of fantasy football. Deontay Foreman is the Titans running back you're starting this weekend.
And again, I really want to see, like, if Derrick Henry plays into the playoffs and he has two games of the playoffs, at minimum, whatever,
right.
Let's say he has two games and he runs for like 274 yards in those two games. Then he's back in the conversation for 1.01 next year.
Sure.
If he doesn't play at all, or if he has one game and he's bottled up for like 56 yards, then my belief is that Jonathan Taylor will be the runaway consensus number one player drafted next year. And that'll be the conversation all offseason. Is Jonathan Taylor, how big of a gap is it between he and Derrick Henry?
Yeah, I mean, I have Taylor at one. Have Taylor at 101 in my way too early top 50 2022 ranks. I don't know that there's anything that Derrick Henry could do in the playoffs that would make me change that.
Well, it would put it this way, though. The gap would be much more narrow,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's fair. Then
Henry may say, you know what, I'm number two. Yeah.
It's a conversation because he's, but just, you know, based on youth, based on lack of injury, you know, lack of injury, it feels like Taylor has more passing game upside than Derrick Henry does. Feels like, I don't know. I think I prefer, as good as the Titans offensive line is, I think I prefer the Colts offensive line next
year. You're nitpicking,
like,
though, right? Hey, you're right. Nitpicking. Yeah. Clyde Edwards-Helaire did not practice yesterday for the Chiefs. They play on Saturday. He, quote unquote, like Lamar Jackson, has a chance to play against the Broncos. I hope Clyde Edwards-Helaire is fine and good for when the Chiefs start their playoff push. For fantasy purposes, though, Matthew, it's much easier in terms of deciding which Chiefs back to play if there is only one available. Darrell Williams has been better, simply put. He is the only guy, he has been far more effective than when Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been the lead back. It's just, for fantasy purposes, it's cut and dry.
I agree. 1,000%.
So we'll see. If Clyde Edwards-Helaire does play on Saturday and you use Darrell Williams this past weekend, I think you need to consider other options there. Because not that he certainly could have a reasonable day. I'm not saying that he is bound to have a 4.5-point game, but the opportunity for him to have, what was it last week, like 25 points, certainly is reduced dramatically if CEH is available on the field on Saturday. Play against Denver. The game is in Denver, so we'll see if CEH travels on Friday.
Yeah.
Last piece of news here is Joe Mixon, according to Adam Schefter, tested positive this morning for COVID-19. Schefter, in his tweet, said he is out on Sunday against the Browns. My own inference from that is that Joe Mixon is unvaccinated, and because he is an unvaccinated player, that would mean that the soonest he could return if testing positive on Wednesday is Monday. So all good for the Bengals playoff push, assuming I am inferring this correctly. But we won't see him on Sunday. And what's interesting about this, Matthew, is a couple of things. First of all, they had five guys go on the COVID-19 list yesterday, including pass rusher Trey Hendrickson, safety Von Bell, his team captain, like some really good players for them. I don't know what the Bengals are going to do this weekend in terms of playing their starters. I don't know that I've seen a team come out and say, we're not playing our guys so far that's in the playoffs this weekend. The closest I think that we've heard is that the Eagles have kind of stopped short of saying, like, we're definitely going to play. Like, a couple of the players referred to it yesterday almost like, if I get the chance to play on Saturday, I expect to play great or something like that. Whereas others, Aaron Rodgers during the Manning cast and Mike McCarthy for the Cowboys, all these coaches who you could make the case for sitting their players have come out and said, we're playing our guys. This is a long-winded way of saying, I don't know who's going to be available for the Bengals beyond Joe Mixon on Sunday. Like, if you have Jamar Chase or T. Higgins or Joe Burrow even, like, stand by. You might need to make an adjustment this weekend with Cincinnati because there's a remote path, but a path for them to be the number one seed in the AFC. But the farthest they can drop is 4, and they're currently 3. If you assume Kansas City holds serve on Saturday and you think that the Titans are going to beat the Texans on Sunday, then Cincinnati is probably bound for the 3, or they're basically the 3 or the 4 seed. And for them, they may say, it's more important for us to rest our guys who have been playing every week and playing basically playoff games for a month now, rather than having Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and T. Higgins on the field for the chance to potentially be the 3 seed versus the 4.
Yeah, you know, it's
a lot of, like, ifs, ands, whats, buts, you name
it. They do. Here's the thing, though. They do have to field a team.
I do, yeah.
In a weird way, field, it's actually not that you would ever want a player to get COVID.
Yeah.
You would never want a player to get to have any.
You may say what I think I know what you're going to say.
But I'm saying, but knowing that aside, so we hope Joe Mixon is healthy and all NFL players are. Well, like, we're not rooting for that. But just from the point of view of fantasy football, knowing that Joe Mixon is out, I actually think could be potentially helpful because if he were active, like, well, how many snaps is he going to play? You know, that kind of thing. my expectation here is that Samaje Perine gets a decent amount of work. You'll see some Chris Evans as well.
Yeah.
You know, and they have some other guys there, but I would think that Samaje Perine is a viable RB2 this week against Cleveland. Because I think that had Joe Mixon been active, you would have said, like, yeah, maybe he gets the first two series, right, and then it's Samaje Perine who sort of takes over. You know, like, they're Couple not going to...
Right, yeah, no, anyway, I agree. I agree. You're so, right. There's clarity. And again, I don't even know if we have to couch it anymore by saying we don't want players to get COVID. Like, if you think that we root for that stuff, then, like, get a life, all right? Please, stop. We don't want anybody to get COVID. We don't want players to miss their miss games. This is their job. This is their livelihood, okay? We are simply trying to use that context to give you better information and data. And what I will say is that you're right. Like, clarity helps right now. Clarity helps. The other thing I'll say that I don't want to be pessimistic, but, like, let's monitor the Bengals for the rest of the week too, sure, right? Sure. I mean, they you know, it's five players yesterday, at least one today. Like, hopefully Samaje Perine and other running backs who they spend the most time with Joe Mixon are good for the rest of the week.
Right.
As well.
We have seen this before many times before, where a player in one position group tests positive and then the rest of the players in that position group or multiple players in that position group test positive as well, because to your point, they're all in the running back room for that. The one thing I want to say is, just going back for what you were saying about, like, obviously, hey, obviously, we're not rooting for... Yes, of course. I think rational people understand that.
Yeah.
We are not... This is not a world where there's entirely rational people. There are people that... There are a couple of people. There are people that actively look to try to... There are anti-ESPNers. There are people that actively look for... That literally make a living trying to find mistakes or... show ESPN and ESPN talent, which is what we're called, not that we're particularly talented, but whatever.
Agreed on that part.
But the ESPN personalities are people that work for the company in a poor light. And sometimes it's self-inflicted and deserved, the criticism, and a lot of times it isn't. Or things are blown up out of proportion. Regardless, so that's one thing, one reason why you sort of have to be careful, right, and be very clear about what you mean. The other thing is that I think a criticism of fantasy football analysts as a whole, and I think this is sometimes a very legitimate criticism, is that fantasy football analysts, I'm speaking in a generality here, are, you know, treat athletes as just sort of statistical pieces of meat. They don't treat them as human beings. They're just like, what can you do for me? Oh, this guy just had a season-ending injury, blah, blah, whatever. Here's the backup you need to pick up. And that there's an indifference to the risk these players put themselves through each and every week.
Yep.
And so that's the other reason why I think it's always important to try to couch it. Obviously, I think most rational people, especially fans of our show that know us, know our personalities and listen day in, day out, know, like, you and I are pro player. We are pro humans. We are pro safety and health, you know, But anyway, video clips can always be, we do this live. We do it live every single day. We do it without a script. And so things can always be taken out of context. So it's always important to, at least from my point of view, I always try to be overly cautious in trying to explain a point of view, especially when you're talking about
that. That's well said and worth reminding people, even those that listen every single day and have a pretty good grip of who we are, what we stand for. I got five players. Let's rip through them for week 18 ranks quickly, because I think the 2022 conversation is just as, if not much more compelling.
Okay.
We start with Kyler Murray, who the last time the Seahawks and Cardinals played, he was not available for Arizona. He had that few week stretch where he was out with an ankle. Since he returned, Matthew, the most important thing that has happened as far as fantasy is concerned is that he has run the football aplenty. As a matter of fact, the four best rushing games of Kyler Murray's season have come since the beginning of December post that injury. He is back to being basically a lock-it-in QB1.
Especially, by the way, with James Conner potentially not playing in this game, less than 100%, right? Hasn't played the last 2 weeks. And so trying to get more rushing out of that offense, right? There's only so much that Chase Edmonds can do. You think about the fact that, you know, no DeAndre Hopkins as well. Antoine Wesley obviously had the nice game last week with the two touchdowns, but they're relying on Kyler Murray to generate offense more than they have much of this season. Over the last 2 weeks, he's the fourth best quarterback in fantasy, over 44 fantasy points, Seattle's defense has not been intimidating this year. We'd expect Kyler to have another big game. You and I both have him as a top five play. I actually am at QB3. You're slightly lower than me at five, but we both have him as a locked-in QB1 this week.
Zeke has sort of just gradually fallen from a top 10 running back, a top five running back every single week, to settling into like an RB2, Matthews. I have him ranked 16th this week. You have him 15th. As I mentioned earlier, Mike McCarthy, their head coach, said we're going to play our guys. We're going to Philadelphia in preparation to win a game. Assuming that holds true, and I think that's what you have to do, is with all these games, you have to take their coaches at their words unless you hear a report prior to the game that tells you otherwise. But I am treating Zeke like he is playing on Saturday, and I've got him as an RB2, Matthew. The problem is that while he still gets a good amount of work, he no longer gets the elite work. He used to get elite work every single week. He now just gets good work.
Yeah, the positives are that he at least looks like Zeke. Like, he's not getting as much work.
Yeah.
You know, part of the appeal of Ezekiel Elliott over the years has been, you know, obviously a lot of talent, good offensive line, insane volume. Just massive, massive workload. The workload has lessened this year with Tony Pollard. There were also moments throughout the season where you're just like, hey, he kind of looks a little slower. Looks like he's limping a little bit. Yeah. He looks like he's a different speed than Tony Pollard. He doesn't have as many gears as Tony Pollard. But feels like the last couple of weeks when you've watched him, you're like, okay, that's the Zeke I know. And the other thing is that you sit there and you look at the landscape of running backs in fantasy football and you say, all right, who's the running back that has the best chance at scoring a touchdown this week? All right, Jonathan Taylor, who's the second best running back that has a chance of scoring a touchdown this week in any given game? Right, you start going down that list, and Ezekiel Elliott is going to be high on that list every single week.
That's fair.
Even when they get in close, like they like to run the ball. They like to run it with Ezekiel Elliott. I will say that the Eagles, while they do have a good run defense in general, you've been able to run on them. Jarrett Patterson, you know, a game, the Washington offense is much, much worse than Dallas's, and yet Jarrett Patterson last week had a very nice game against the Eagles. 2 weeks prior, Washington also had a good game running the ball against Philadelphia. They've given up a number of rushing touchdowns over the course of the year. Thirsty Kyle, look that up real quickly. But my expectation is that if we were sitting here placing bets on, like, most likely, you know, who are the most likely guys to score a touchdown this week? You know, Taylor's up there. Najee Harris is up there. But
Dalvin Cook, those types. Yeah.
Right, all the obvious guys. But I would argue Ezekiel Elliott is one of those obvious guys. So even if he's getting less work, I just don't know that you have a better option available on your bench or in the waiver wire that you would slot in Ezekiel Elliott, that you would swap out Ezekiel Elliott. If you have Zeke and you're playing this week, you're starting him and you're hoping he gets into the end zone.
Let's assume that Antonio Gibson plays for the Washington football team on Sunday. He remains on the COVID-19 list as of this conversation, but it seems likely he will be back by Sunday to play against the New York Giants. And Matthew, prior to going on the COVID-19 list, the workload was really significant for Antonio Gibson. Too good to ignore. I've got him inside my top 10 again this week.
As do I. You and I both have him higher than the consensus ranks. We both have him as a top 9 play. I'm at running back 8 this week. He scored each in his previous two games. Last week, Jarrett Patterson, as I said, 98 yards and a touchdown. What Scott Turner wants to do with that offense is I think he's trying to hide Taylor Heineke a little bit, which makes sense. They're trying to do long drives. They're trying to run the ball, trying to keep their defense off the field, trying to sort of, you know, protect Tyler, trying to make it so that Taylor Heineke doesn't have to try to win this game. And with no JD McKissick, obviously it's been the Antonio Gibson show. You'll see a little bit of Jarrett Patterson. Maybe you'll see whatever Jonathan Williams and Wendell Smallwood, but Antonio Gibson, assuming health, is a pretty good lock for around 20 touches in this one, and that kind of volume in a matchup against the Giants, who are at this point sort of packing it in and making trips, you know, making vacation plans, you know, like,
sure,
right? I think Antonio Gibson has a big game this week.
I don't mean to get us off track, but I meant to say this following the Zeke conversation, is as I look around the NFL right now, in terms of like notable players in which the franchise has to make a decision on them at some point in the not too distant future, Zeke, Baker Mayfield, the two that really come to mind for me. Baker's in a different category. Like, I think it's plausible that Cleveland, I mean, I think it's obvious, right? Like, it seems like there is a divorce heading its way in Cleveland, right? Like, it's, if you were to put the odds on Baker returning to Cleveland next year, like, I think there, it might be just as likely he's not there as that he is there, right? Probably more likely he's gone than he stays. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm totally reading the tea leaves wrong, but like, after this season, after some of the frustrations, the calling out the play calling and some of the remarks he's made, it just seems like a divorce is possible, if not likely. And Zeke is a different conversation. It's not that the Cowboys have been expressing frustration. You know, there's been frustration expressed on either side. It's more just that Zeke is no longer the player he was when he signed a six-year, $90 million deal. The Cowboys got a bunch of money tied up to a lot of players on their books. At some point, you have to account for the possibility that one player and his extension could come at the cost of another player, and maybe Zeke is a salary cap situation in future years.
So two things to react to there. I think, listen, you know contracts much better than I. That's your beat. That's your lane. When people ask me contract questions, I'm always just like, let me ask Field. I bow down to you in this one. What I understand,
yeah,
and understand it's a small thimbleful, but from what I understand, that it feels like Zeke, in terms of the way Zeke's contract is structured, they can get out of Zeke's contract much easier a year from now than they can this season, this offseason.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, like you're thinking dynasty wise, like there's probably one more year of Zeke in Dallas being Zeke. And then, then it's a little bit of, you know, sort of Todd Gurley situation, like how, you know, expensive running back with a lot of wear on the tires. Like, you know, what's the opportunity for Zeke post next year? But it feels like he's got one more year in Dallas. Baker, it's interesting. That's an interesting conversation. Probably one more for NFL Live. I have two takes on this, though, because my buddy Anthony texted me last night. Anthony's a crazy Baker Mayfield fan. Loves Oklahoma. And he's just like, and he sent me an article that said, you know, that had potential spots where Baker would land.
Washington.
And Washington is one of the places. He just texted me. He just laughed. He says, just so you know, we're following Baker wherever he goes, even Washington. You know, I wish I texted back like, dude, save yourself. But it's in my blood. I can't get rid of it. I'm a Washington fan till the day I die. But like my buddy Anthony, you know, like stay a Browns fan, you know, whatever. Anyway.
Browns fandom's that much easier?
That's a pretty good point.
They've had a tough run as well. But
Anthony,
I feel like
would be better
optimism.
Off like Baker being traded to like the Cardinals just to be Kyler's backup. Like he's going to be a backup for the rest of his life, but he's just going to the Cardinals. Like he's got a better team, right?
Right, yeah. But
for Anthony's purpose, not for Baker's purpose.
Yeah, but first off, I think Baker Mayfield's a start in the NFL next year.
I think so too.
Just again, because like you start going through the teams and you're just like, nope, that team's need, like, especially by the Pittsburgh going to need quarterback, Washington's need a quarterback.
Oh,
like,
I've got some funky Baker trades up my sleeve.
Right,
don't you worry.
There's a long list of teams that need quarterbacks. Number two is, I think I'm going to predict Baker returns to Cleveland, and I'll tell you why. I get it.
Wow.
I get it. And listen, I could be dead wrong on this, but here's what I think happens. And I could be wrong on this.
Okay.
But I think what happens is like right now there's the emotions of the season. They're all frustrated. It hasn't, you know, this is a team that was in the playoffs last year that expected to be back in the playoffs this year. It hasn't gone the way they wanted it to. Right. Okay. And so there's a lot of frustration on both sides and the, you know, Beckham calling him out, all that Beckham senior, et cetera. All right. But what happens is that, okay, it calms down, and then you're the general manager, you're the front office of the Cleveland Browns, and you start looking, okay, we get rid of Baker. All right, then what are we doing? And you start looking at the draft class, and you're like, well, we're not going to have a high draft pick, and it's a pretty weak class. Most scouts consider it to be a fairly weak class, especially for quarterbacks,
totally
right?
Fair, yep.
So our answer probably isn't in the draft this year. All right, who's out there? All right, well, we might be able to get Marcus Mariota. You know, like you start going through the list. Like I remember this with Washington and Kirk Cousins, and for years fans were like, we got to get rid of Kirk Cousins. And I was always like, who you getting? You know what I mean? Like Aaron Rodgers ain't walking through that door. So who you're going to get rid of Kirk Cousins. I get it. You think he's a B, but then who you getting? And the answer is like, you're getting like Mitch Trubisky. You're getting Andy Dalton. You're getting those guys. You're getting Marcus Mariota. You're getting borderline starter types. You're like, hey, Fitzy. Hey, Ryan Fitzpatrick, how's that hip? You think you can come back at year 39 for one more season? You know, like, Ben, what are you thinking? You want to go one more round? Like it's once you start doing the math of like, okay, I'm angry. Baker's not the guy. He's not the number one overall pick. Get rid of him, blah, blah, blah. You're like, okay, what are we doing? Case Keenum? I just think that reality is going to set in pretty quick. And unless they know they could get a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers, and all due respect to Cleveland, I don't think you're getting those guys to Cleveland.
Mm.
You know, especially by the way, they've got issues at their pass. Like one of the reasons Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay, not just the warm weather and a pass friendly offense and Bruce Arians, they had Chris Godwin and they had Mike Evans. Yeah. Like, you know, like he's just like, I'm going to have like among the best wide and Cameron Braid at the time. And like, I'm going to have among the best wide receiving core, pass catching core that I've had in my career. Like, what quarterback out there is like, you know what? Let me throw to Anthony Schwartz and Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah,
like, those are nice young players, but they're not like.
They're okay. Yeah.
Right.
I get you. This is a, yeah. We got off the rails here.
I have this more show is about off the
sure,
off
sure,
the rails,
sure. But I have more optimism about how crazy the quarterback market will be this offseason relative to yours. You definitely, you could very well end up prevailing with that logic there. I just, my spidey sense is up on the Cleveland Browns quarterback situation.
Which is completely fair. I would say yes. If the decision has to be made today, I think it's more like, I'm just saying, I think when the cold reality of, as they start thinking about, okay, we get rid of Baker, so then what's our solution next year?
I think be surprised. Like, we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, maybe.
Right. Let's just finish off the ranks.
You know that world better than I do. I'll say this. There will be a market for Baker Mayfield.
How about this? I'll say this as well. We're going to do fantasy-focused content during the offseason that is not strictly fantasy. Like,
sure,
we'll just talk some ball. Just see what happens.
There you go.
Terry McLaurin for the Washington football team is wide receiver 30, sort of mercilessly for me, Matthew. I feel bad for this player, obviously. Quarterback play has been a disaster for him. They play against the Giants. He has not been better than wide receiver 30 since he was all the way up at wide receiver 30 in week 11. He has one red zone target since week 11, Matthew. I don't know where the days have gone of loving watching Terry McLaurin, but the quarterback play, the bad offense, just in general, has all undone him. It is not him. It is certainly not him at all, but you can't rank him that high as a result of all the disasters around him.
Also, by the way, I haven't looked this up yet. Kyle, maybe you can look this up real quickly. Does Mike Clay have James Bradberry shadowing him? Mike does a great job, of course, with the wide receiver cornerback matchups every single week. And highly recommend that column every week. Mike does a great job with it. But either way, one of the reasons why I'm high on Antonio Gibson this week is the same reason why I have Terry McLaurin, one of my favorite players in the NFL, as a low-end wide receiver 3. I'm at wide receiver 27 this week. Thirsty Kyle gives me the thumbs up. Yes, he does expect a shadow from James Bradberry. Now, listen, Terry McLaurin is good enough to win on one-on-one battles, but in terms of the passing offense is inconsistent, to be kind, right now. To your point, last 3 weeks, he's wide receiver 43 in total points. He left week 14 early, but in the three games since, wide receiver 43 in terms of total points.
Yeah, we're probably too high on him, to be honest with you. Wide receiver 27 and wide receiver 30. We might be too high.
We might be.
Sadly.
You're banking on the Giants have just been so bad and they're just sort of phoning this in, and you're banking on his personal talent. In terms of McLaurin, it would be an interesting conversation. Who's had worse quarterback? Who's the most talented wide receiver with the worst quarterback play over the course of their NFL career? Terry McLaurin or Allen Robinson?
Probably Terry McLaurin so far.
Yeah,
because Allen Robinson at least had a lot of years where he was playing junk time games. Or at least not a lot, maybe he had at least a couple of years, right? Where it was like even junk time Washington football isn't nearly as productive. Like that Blake Bortles to Allen Robinson connection was like legit fun in fantasy for a couple of years.
Right. I was just going to say that with the, you know, I'm just talking more NFL, but like to, like at least with like Bortles or Nick Foles or even Andy Dalton on some, like, you know, Trubisky, like they're willing to sling it a little bit.
Sure.
Washington had a lot of play, like Alex Smith, Dwayne Haskins, like Kyle Allen, you know, just like dink and dunkers. Yeah. Well, a lot of the quarterbacks that have come through Washington have been much more dink and dunkers as opposed to like Blake Bortles will sling it.
Yeah,
like,
he's, you know, not afraid.
So he's not afraid. And so, yeah, I would think McLaurin's had worse quarterback play in his NFL career than Allen Robinson. But both guys insanely talented, and you hope they get good quarterback play.
As we speak, by the way, Antonio Gibson has been activated from the COVID-19 list as we speak. Last one here, Matthew, make this quick. Hollywood Brown for the Baltimore Ravens. He has 0 touchdowns since week 7. 0 since week 7 when they played the Bengals. Wow, week 7, that's like October. He has 4 straight games without a deep reception. He has been outside wide receiver 50 in 3 of his past 4 games. The case for him being up at 22 is perhaps a reflection of the possibility of Lamar Jackson playing, the fact that there are some wide receivers we're uncertain about. He has decent volume week over week, but the big plays have gone, as if the touchdowns, it feels like a lot has gone to Mark Andrews instead.
Correct. By the way, also, Kirk Cousins officially activated off the COVID-19, the reserve COVID-19 list. So there you go. So good news for people that are going to start Justin Jefferson this week.
Yep. Hollywood Brown, good luck. If you're playing him, it's at your own risk. you have to hope for the volume. The floor has been reasonable, right? Like, I know wide receiver 50 sounds bad, but like in terms of volume, the targets have been there. Just not a ton of upside right now without those touchdowns. Again, he has not scored a touchdown since week 7. That is crazy. Let's get to your early top 50 for 2022, the entirety of which you can find in Matthew's love-hate column for week 17. I'm just going to bop around here and ask you a couple questions, Matthew.
Go for it.
We can't cover all the ground here. So Jonathan Taylor is number 1 overall. No surprise there. Number 2 overall is Cooper Kupp, and that's actually where I want to start. I think the case against Cooper Kupp as the number 1 wide receiver off the board and the number 2 wide receiver, excuse me, the number 2 overall player, number 2 player overall is probably simply this. Michael Thomas. Right, because after his historic record-breaking season, he bounced back, and I know that injuries obviously played a big part in it, but like hasn't been, you know, there hasn't been the same level of domination since. Is that a fair argument against Cooper Kupp, the fact that this is the best year of his career by far? It's not like this is the second year of his career. He's been in the league for a while now. Or are you banking on the possibility that what happened was Matthew Stafford unleashed a new level of Cooper Kupp, they're going to be together again next year, and that a season not as dominant as this one, but still pretty darn dominant, is going to be more the expectations for him going forward?
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think it's a couple things. First off, to me, if I knew for a fact that Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams were back in Green Bay next year. Davante Adams is my number 1 wide receiver.
Okay.
Right? He's his money in the bank as it gets.
Yeah, the consistency over time too, right?
It's exactly.
4, 5, 6, 7 years of this, whatever
so,
it's been.
So understand that that's, and I still have Adams as wide receiver too, but the uncertainty of what's going on in terms of Aaron Rodgers for next year and whether him and Adams are playing together is why I, at the moment, it's sort of like if you had to draft today, I think you're taking Kupp over Adams. The other thing about putting a wide receiver at number 2 is, you know, yesterday, Field, you and I and Stefania and Daniel each talked about something we learned this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that I would have brought up that we ran out of time, but I think is an important lesson is just how valuable good wide receivers are, how fragile running backs are. And we see this, you know, like every year there are running players get hurt all the time.
Sure.
Right. And the people, the zero RB truthers will point to these guys. And you're also like, okay, fair enough. You know, but like, whatever, Chris Godwin got hurt. Like there were, you know, number of wide receivers, you know, Travis Kelce didn't return first round value this year.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. There's examples you can cherry pick whatever direction you want to go. But just the idea that I do think it is less important to have an elite running back at the top of your draft. I guess my point is, I think the floor for Cooper Kupp, for my little Cooper Kupp, yep. I think the floor next year for my little Cooper Kupp is as good as the floor for any running back. Again, I think there's increased injury risk with running back that isn't there with wide receivers. And you start thinking about the running backs. Think about the elite running backs that would be after Jonathan Taylor. Derrick Henry coming off a major injury. Dalvin Cook, another year where he missed games due to injury. Austin Eckler missed a game due to COVID, missed all the games last year with a hamstring injury, had a hamstring scare in the beginning of the year. Chris McCaffrey missed whatever, 8 billion games over the last 2 years. Alvin Kamara missed like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Like every team, every team that I had Alvin Kamara on did not go far in the playoffs.
Question for you.
So my point is that you start going down the list and you're like, well, who's safer than Cooper Kupp? We always say this, you know, you can't win your league in the first round. You can lose it. And so I would argue that the floor of Cooper Kupp is as good as any non-Jonathan Taylor running back. And the upside is what we've just seen, which is best player in fantasy football.
So a couple of thoughts here. But let me ask this question first. Of the leagues that you play in, what percentage of them do you think are just sort of standard 10-team leagues? Low percentage, medium percentage, high percentage? Because for me, it's very low
percentage. I played in one ESPN standard 10-team league, and that was the Stephen A. Smith Celebrity League that I played in. Which, by the way, we filled with celebrities, but we filled with celebrities that know what they're doing. People that I have played in leagues with, many like Evan Longoria, all played in leagues with Evan for a long time. Very active fantasy player in multiple leagues. John Legend's in 5 fantasy leagues. Very active player, very smart player. Rachel Lindsay, our friend Rachel Lindsay from The Bachelor and Bachelorette, plays in multiple leagues every year. Really smart fantasy player. So I played in one 10-team league, and it was a highly competitive. competitive league.
So I dramatically reduced my leagues this year just with a lot of life going on this fall.
Yeah. And you're about to be a father.
I wanted to see just sort of what it was like. And frankly, I'd reached a point where I was in too many.
Yeah.
And then I think this year I got into too few. I just felt like there were a couple of players that I was like, how did I not have that guy in a roster? And I'm like, I only played in six leagues this year, right? Which people are like, only six, you weirdo.
I was in 15, and honestly, I want to cut down next year.
So I think the sweet spot is like maybe eight or nine. And by the way, of those six, like one's the Scott Fishbowl, right? You draft in July, right? One is a dynasty. Like a couple of them three of them are dynasty leagues. So it's like, you know, those are. They require less maintenance week over week and year over year because you have such deep rosters and it's not like, you know, anyways.
And one of them is the War Room League, which is a 16-team league, which is just a weird, deep league that has its own kind of strategy and theories.
Yeah. And that's part of why I wanted to bring this up is that I wonder if our opinion on the value of like a high floor wide receiver versus running backs might be different if we were playing in more standard 10-team leagues.
Maybe.
So I just feel like in our 16-team league, especially the Warren League, where my team stunk this year, like it was just a disaster from the start. We had Antonio Gibson with the first pick, the 15th pick in the draft, 14th pick. I was 14. Mina was 15. Who won the whole thing? Congratulations, Mina Kimes, by the way. Super awesome for her in her first year in the league, no less. She's the GOAT. But I had 14 Antonio Gibson, right? And it's like, I think I certainly would have preferred a wide receiver in that spot that really panned out. But I feel like in a 10-team league, maybe there's more margin for error when you take those big swings on running backs early. Not even a big swing, but you can swing and miss more on a 10-team league. That just seems to be where my mind is drifting to right now.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, right? I mean, because, yes, in theory, because there's more players available in the waiver wire and you're able to be more active. On the other hand, the bar is raised because it's in a 10-team league. Everyone has, in theory, a superstar team or has the, you know what I mean? So it's a little bit of, you know, it's always when people, and this is one of the things that drives me crazy. I'll get on my soapbox here for 10 seconds, which is people go, you know, 10-team leagues, like fantasy football snobs. Like, oh, that's easy. That's, you know, and I'm just like, it actually isn't. Like when you're sitting there trying to decide between Antonio Gibbs, you have like three superstar running backs and you're like, I've got James Robinson, Antonio Gibson, and
Joe Mixon coming in the season were big question marks. Right, the same tier.
But even like just on a week-to-week basis, you're like, if you guys saw like my Twitter feed that my mentions taking out the crazies, like just in terms of people are like every week on Flex Appeal, people are like, you know, Miles Sanders? And you're like, in our War Room League, Miles Sanders is a no-brainer starter at running back. But
this past week, it was DK Metcalf versus Rashad Penny.
Right, thank you, exactly.
Sort of number two, number three. And we were like, well, you know, like, I'm not sure who has more upside. But, turned out both of them had all the upside.
But that's my point, is that in a deeper league, you're not deciding between DK Metcalf or Rashad Penny. You're starting both of them, you know, luckily. But in a 10-team league, like, that's a decision. And it ended up, the answer was both or either, because they were both awesome. But that's my point, is that I don't know that there's it. I think it deceptively appears like there's more margin for error, but I don't think there is, just because the bar is raised and the scores are higher. And anyway,
this is a lot.
Point was, I just don't know where you would rank Cooper after that season.
Yeah.
He's going to finish as the greatest player in fantasy history, isn't he? At least as a position player.
It's going to be one of the best. I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson's 2006 season will forever. That's be really hard to beat. But he's having one of the greatest receiver seasons ever, if not the greatest in terms of overall fantasy points and PPR scoring. It's right up there with some of the best that Jerry Rice ever put together.
Right, and then you're like, okay, why did this happen, and can it repeat? Assuming you're going to have the same coach, the same quarterback, and it's not like with Amon-Ra St. Brown, the argument against is like, Hockenson was out, Swift was out, he was all they had. Right? Cooper Kupp was putting up monster numbers with Robert Woods there. He's putting up monster numbers with Robert Woods out. He's putting up monster numbers with Odell Beckham Jr. there. Like, it doesn't matter who else is around him. He's put up monster numbers week in, week out. It's not only monster numbers, but it's consistently monster numbers.
Yep. All right, let's move forward here. Let's ping pong through
a few
other things.
He's still a young player.
I take some.
He's like 25.
I take the blame for getting us off track. Let me ask just a couple more questions. And just like sort of briefer conversations is you have Christian McCaffrey, RB5, that's seventh overall. I think most people are intuitive enough to understand why. There is a chance, like if you were to give me a pie and slice it up into 100 slices, 100 pieces of pie, and say, like, put the number of pieces in front of the player that you think will have the best fantasy season next year amongst all NFL players, like Christian McCaffrey probably gets like, I don't know, 10, 12 pieces, 10 or 12% chance he finishes the number one overall scoring player in fantasy next year. He's still Christian McCaffrey. He has to stay healthy. Obviously, that has been a big problem for him over the past two seasons.
22 of 32 games. He has crazy. Missed 22 yeah. of the last 32 games. Like he's over the Panthers' last 32 games, Chris McCaffrey has played in 10 of them.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Let's keep moving forward here.
Like less than 30% did that math in my head. Don't want to brag, but literally just did that math in my head. Less than 30% of the games played over multiple seasons. It's risky in the first round, right?
Yeah, it is. We just talked about Zeke, by the way, and you have him at RB9, number 11. I thought that was a little bit rich. I was surprised by that one. I mean, there's a chance he'll be drafted like that, but doesn't it feel like there are some indicators going in the wrong direction, plus some positive indicators for Tony Pollard? How strong would you feel about Zeke at RB9?
Just because I feel like, so here's the next running backs in terms of who's running back 10, I have DeAndre Swift. Yep. Running back 11, Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
Running back 12 is Antonio Gibson, David Montgomery at running back 13. Like, so you start nitpicking. You're like, okay, I'll take Zeke out. Mm-hmm. Who moves up?
Right.
Like Swift, you have injury concerns, right? And you have concerns about the team a little bit. You have concerns about Nick Chubb's passing game usage and also has missed time due to injury each of the last couple of years. And, you know, Kareem Hunt at the moment is still there. We'll see, you know, if he were to leave the Browns, which I know is a possibility, that becomes more interesting.
I don't think so. Did I miss something?
I just end this deal up. I think he's a free agent this year.
No, he's got a couple few more years after this. Is that
they signed an extension. You're right. Good. So yeah, so exactly. Kareem Hunt is still there. Like,
I feel you.
If you wanted to put Nick Chubb over Ezekiel Elliott, like I'm not looking at you weird, sure. Just sort of feels like I'm sort of again thinking like Jerry Jones, thinking like that staff. Basically, we got one last year of Zeke. We're gonna run him into the ground.
Okay, fair enough.
You know.
So, we talked about this a few days ago.
Zeke is still a top 10 running back on a points per game basis this year. As frustrating as he's been, right? I mean, and again, also, like what did he do? He missed one game this year. Like I think he's missed one game in his career due to injury.
Yeah, it certainly is rare in which Zeke does miss time. Interestingly, so just a couple more thoughts here because we do have to get to our award nominees. You talked about this a bit a few days ago, so I'm not going to rehash the entire conversation, but Mark Andrews checks in above Travis Kelce as tight end one, 20 and 21 overall. So what you're really telling us, Matthew, is that you've got two dominant tight ends and you can't go wrong with either.
Yeah, I mean, when I rank players next to each other, it's on purpose, and it's basically saying like I have to put one ahead of the other because that's what a ranking is, but when I put two players at the same position right next to each other, I'm like, it's a coin flip for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I have Andrews slightly higher than Kelce, but like he scored more fantasy points on a per-game basis than Travis Kelce this year. He had four different games with 25 or more fantasy points. That is the most by a tight end since Rob Gronkowski had six such games in 2011. And so, you know, Kelce will be, I think, 33 next year.
Sounds right. He's in his 30s. But
yeah,
so
he's going to be 30.
You're not far off if you're wrong.
I think so Andrews is younger. Feels like, again, the same thing you just said with Zeke. Like, feels like Kelce's slowing down a little bit. He's still Travis Kelce. He's still elite. He still has Patrick Mahomes throwing to him. But again, as we talked about the other day, feels like you're starting to see a little bit of the league catching up defensively to what Andy Reid and the Chiefs offense is doing. And so the inconsistency of Kelce and the Chiefs offense gives me slight pause here. Andrews is clearly the leading receiver on that Ravens passing offense. He's clearly the pass funnel part of that offense. And the weird thing is, I don't know if it was fluky or not, but again, like Kevin Pulsford texted me this the other day, Travis Kelce is like outside the top 20 among tight ends in terms of end zone targets this year.
That was so bizarre.
I think he's gotten five on the year.
Crazy.
Five end zone targets for Travis Kelce. What do you got, Thirsty Kyle? You're looking stuff up over there.
No, Zeke's just circling back to that. RB6 in total points, 16 per game. So he's a little less valuable per game, but obviously health is kind of what you're baking in there.
Yeah.
And yes, Travis Kelce, 33 years old next October.
Okay, there you have it. So let's get to the award nomination, shall we?
Yep.
So Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong here. We're going to give it the award. We're going to mention the nominees.
We will, to your point, we're going to do offseason, and we will have many shows over the offseason to bake into the, to really dive into my offseason rankings, your offseason rankings. Sure. I'm sure they'll come up at some point soon. I'm sure Mike Clay will have some as well, and we'll... Yep. We'll get in there and argue all of it, and that's what's kind of what fun about this game.
So, Kyle, you want me to read these, and do people have the right to vote somewhere? Is that
they
what
will.
You
we're
going to
be posting it on Twitter. It'll be up for a couple days.
Yep.
We're going to the fan vote. We have 10 voters. 9 of them are analysts here at ESPN, and one's going to be the Twitter vote. So the Twitter vote, in essence, gets 10% of your pie. You like talking pies today.
Yep.
10% of the pie and who wins these awards. You guys have a voice. Go to Fantasy Focus on Twitter. We'll have the polls up this afternoon. Let your voice be heard. And Field, take it away with who the official nominees are for our 2021 awards.
Yeah, we don't have a ton of time, so I'm just going to read through the nominees and just stop me when there's something that really, really intrigues you. The first
you wanna,
one.
You want to go, we'll back, go back and forth here?
Yep. Yeah. 1 Week Wonder, which I think you guys probably get. It's a week of production that seemingly came out of nowhere. It does not have to be a one-hit wonder. Very important distinction there. Tyler Huntley, week 15, 35.9 points. Isaiah McKenzie, week 16, 29.4 points. Rex Burkhead, week 16, 28.9 points. And Kadarius Toney, all the way back in week 5, 29.6 points, Matthew.
Next category is game of the year, the best single game of the fantasy season. And you can decide whether when that game happened, if that bakes into it, whether the position bakes into it, because Mark Andrews, week 5 against Indianapolis, 41.7 points, although obviously in tight end premium leagues, he scored even more. Leonard Fournette, week 12 at Indianapolis, 44.1. That's the 4-touchdown game. Jonathan Taylor, week 11 at Buffalo. He was a monster. 53.4 fantasy points. And of course, last week against Kansas City, Jamar Chase, 55.6.
The Alex Smith Award for Comeback Player of the Year. All these players came back from significant injuries. Dak Prescott has been QB 11 after missing 11 games last year. That ankle shattered. It was scary. It certainly was one of those injuries that kind of made you sick to your stomach. Joe Mixon with RB 7. Remember, he missed 10 games last year. It was that weird foot injury where he was going to return and then he didn't, and then he was, and then he didn't. He never wound up returning. He missed 10 games. He has been awesome this season. Deebo Samuel is wide receiver 3. Remember, Deebo missed 9 games last year. There was some uncertainty about him this offseason as well. Deebo Samuel has been unbelievable for San Francisco. And then Joe Burrow. He got hurt last year against Washington. He was QB 9 this season, or he is QB 9 this season after missing the final 6 games of 2020. And that knee injury was certainly scary. It happened on November 22nd. Good to see that he is back and even better than ever.
Disappointing player of the year. This is the opposite of the MVP field, the least return on investment. And you can decide whether or not injuries play into that, right? So this is up to you. But Saquon Barkley, who had an ADP of running back 5, finished as running back 29. Chris McCaffrey, ADP of running back 1, he missed 10 games after a year in which he'd missed 13 games the previous year. DK Metcalf, who an ADP of wide receiver 5, finished on a points per game basis as wide receiver 22. And Terry McLaurin, ADP of wide receiver 9, ended up finishing as wide receiver 31.
Waiver wire wonder, the player that provided the most value that wasn't drafted in most leagues. And a reminder, if you want to vote, go to the @FantasyFocus handle on Twitter. That will be the pinned tweet that you can vote in this thread. Cordarrelle Patterson, who averaged 15.5 fantasy points per game. He is RB 13 this season. Hunter Renfrow, wide receiver 16 with over 15 fantasy points per game. Elijah Mitchell is RB 12, 15.7 fantasy points per game. And Dalton Schultz for the Cowboys, tight end 7 with 12.0 points per game.
The rookie of the year. This one, a lot of great choices here.
So many good ones.
Biggest impact of a first-year player, Najee Harris, who finishes running back 5. Jamar Chase, who finishes wide receiver 5. Jalen Waddle, wide receiver 13, and Javonte Williams, who finished as running back 23. I think you can also bake into where those players were drafted. Najee Harris was great, but he was basically a consensus top 15 player drafted. Jamar Chase was better than Jalen Waddle, but Jamar Chase also went probably 7 rounds ahead of Jalen Waddle.
Right. Yep.
So you can decide among yourself, like, if is it just pure numbers, or is it also baked into what it
cost to acquire said player.
Best value of the year, weighing production along with the ADP. Leonard Fournette, who was drafted as RB 30, 87th overall on a points per game basis, was RB 4, 18.3. James Conner, who was drafted as running back 34, finished as RB 8 overall on a points per game basis, 16.5. Cooper Kupp, drafted as wide receiver 18. That was in the middle of the fifth round. He, of course, 25.8 fantasy points per game. That's wide receiver 1. Worth noting, 25.8 fantasy points per game, the most by any wide receiver who played the entirety of a season. Like, there were a couple of years where Jerry Rice had a shortened season and averaged like 29-something. But Jerry Rice, 25.8, tied with Cooper Kupp for the greatest ever amongst wide receivers. And then Deebo Samuel. That's right, Matthew's little Cooper Kupp. And then Deebo Samuel, drafted as wide receiver 40, middle of the 10th round. He has been wide receiver 3, as I just mentioned, at 20.7 fantasy points per game.
Next category is breakout player of the year, the player that most overachieved expectations. Breakout player of the year. Cordero Patterson, running back 13. He was undrafted in over 97% of leagues. Deebo Samuel, drafted as wide receiver 40, but finished as wide receiver 3. Obviously took his game to a next level even after that productive rookie season 2 years ago. My little Cooper Kupp, as you mentioned, drafted as wide receiver 18, finished as the number one wide receiver and the number one player in fantasy. And then Hunter Renfrow, who was undrafted in over 98% of ESPN leagues and finished the year as wide receiver 16.
Fantasy MVP, this one is very self-explanatory. Mark Andrews, who was tight end 1, he was drafted in the middle of the fifth round, nearly 18 fantasy points per game. Cooper Kupp, who has been wide receiver and player 1, 25.8 fantasy points per game, as I mentioned, drafted 46th overall. Jonathan Taylor, who was has been RB2. Who's ahead of Jonathan Taylor? There's no way.
Derrick Henry.
Oh, in terms of where he was. Points per game. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Drafted 11th overall. He has 22.5 fantasy points per game. And then Austin Eckler, RB3 on a points per game basis, drafted 13th overall, 21 points per game, just one game missed.
Once again, you can factor, you can decide whether ADP factors into whether they're the fantasy MVP or not.
Yep.
And then the last category here, field, is playoff MVP, the most valuable player in weeks 14 through 17. We're defining the playoffs as weeks 14 through 17. And the nominees are Devonta Adams, who had 114 fantasy points in that stretch. My little Cooper Kupp, 108.8 fantasy points. Mark Andrews was amazing down the stretch, 105.5 fantasy points. And Amon-Ra St. Brown of Daniel's Detroit Lions, I should say, not the Tigers. Amon-Ra St. Brown had 100.2 fantasy points in the fantasy playoffs.
He was exceptional when it mattered most. Kyle, what do you got for us? Do you have a question?
Well, we were talking rookie of the year in 2022 ranks. Which rookie from this year are you drafting highest next year? Obviously, the impressive class. You've got Waddle.
My guess is that Jamar Chase will be
Najee Harris.
Maybe Najee. The only question would be if, and again, there are so many questions to answer. But if it's like, you know, if you have Mason Rudolph as a starting quarterback next year for Pittsburgh, and you're like, you know what, they're just going to dare Najee Harris to beat them, right? It's going to be, dare Mason Rudolph to beat them?
It'd be like this year all over again.
Yeah, but Ben, you know, like, he's not dead yet.
Still,
like
Ben, even okay, Ben this, you know, Ben this like, year to Mason Rudolph is still a downgrade.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to say Najee Harris over Jamar Chase.
Javonte Williams, though, is in the conversation.
Javonte, if Melvin Gordon moves on, as is potentially, he's a free agent at the end of this year, then I think he's in the conversation. I think you're probably still taking Najee. Again, it depends on the quarterback
situation.
They trade
situation. For Aaron Rodgers, though, it's like... Oh boy!
Right.
As an example, Packers fan. As an example, Kyle.
If Aaron Rodgers is the starting quarterback of Denver and Melvin Gordon moves on, then yes, I would agree. Javonte Williams is there. Jamar Chase. I think the anti Jamar Chase argument is that his production came. There were spike weeks, right? Obviously, this last week was unbelievable, but there was as red hot as he was over the first half of the year, he got kind of quiet there for a stretch in the second half.
A little bit of a lull.
And just wide receivers deeper than running backs. You know, they're both great. I have Najee Harris highest on my 2022 list.
Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting. One last thing, one point I want to make on Ezekiel Elliott, just as he looked it up. So I went running back 9.
Yeah.
To Kyle's point, in terms of total points, he was running back 6. On a points per game basis, he was running back 16. So kind of split the difference. Yeah. I think he's weirdly, he's got a safe floor and he's got a safe health.
you know, concern, right? Again, as much pounding as that man has taken over the course of his NFL career, he's literally, I think, missed one game due to injury. He had the 6-game suspension at one point in his career, but he's missed one game due to injury over his NFL career. He is incredibly durable.
Yeah, he certainly has stood the test of time. We'll see what things look like next year for that Cowboys offense. There's a lot of time to discuss all of these situations and potential differences and, you get it, transactions, et cetera, et cetera.
So tomorrow we are not here. It is the
CSS
DFS.
Yeah, that's it, the whole show.
With Daniel Dopp, Mike Clay, and Al Zeidenfeld. You, myself, and Stefania back on Friday.
Yep.
Fantasy Football Now, Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2. We will wrap up all of this. And then, of course, next Monday, January 10th, we will wrap, put a bow on the entire season and then discuss our off-season schedule. One last thing I want to mention. I don't know if you remember it, but earlier this year, I wrote a love-hate article about my friend Levy.
Yeah.
A quadriplegic.
Okay.
You know, and he won his league.
Let's go, Levy. Congratulations.
He won his league this year. And so,
good stuff, Levy.
Really proud of him and really thrilled.
Great stuff right there. We'll be back again on Friday. CSS DFS tomorrow. Voting closes at 12.
Quad amputee is what he is. Sorry, he's not quad a quadriplegic. Amputee. He's a quad amputee. So anyway, I want to be clear about that.
Voting closes for our awards noon on Sunday. Noon Eastern on Sunday for Kyle and Matthew on Field. Talk to you guys on Friday.
Peace out.